So welcome to the Functional Data Structures lecture. So today we swapped. I will give the lecture. Probably I will also give the tutorial. So today it's about priority queues. And who knows the heap data structure from, say, heap sort or whatsoever? Okay, so we will do a similar thing, a heap, but we will do it functionally. So first of all, we need some abstract interface for priority queues. So we just want to have a collection of some elements. Each element has a priority, and the operations are, well, insert an element and remove the element with the least priority, or with the highest priority. We will do with the least priority. So we need the empty queue, of course. We need a test whether the queue is empty. We need an insert operation. And we need, well, return the element with a minimum priority. That's the operations we are interested in. We also want to remove it. So we can either have one operation that retrieves the minimal element and the priority queue with the element removed, or we can split it into two operations. Get the minimum element and remove it. The split into two is a bit easier to handle because we don't return a tuple, but that's it. And we will make one simplification here. We don't have elements that are somehow associated with the priority, but we say the elements are the priorities. So the elements are linearly ordered, and we always remove the least element. So that's just a simplification. Otherwise, one would have to pass this priority queue a function to compute the priority from an element, or a function to compare two elements, or something like this. Any questions to the informal interface of a priority queue? Okay. So we want to have multisets, so we want to allow the same element to be in the queue multiple times. So we use multisets as we did for sorting. Okay, so you should know the multiset. Now let's do the implementation formally. We need some type A of priorities that is linearly ordered. Then we need some implementation type Q for the queue. We need an empty operation. It returns a queue. Is empty. It queries whether the queue is empty. Insert. Clear what it does. Gets the minimum element. Well, this will return an element. It will return an element even for the empty queue, but you don't know which one. So you don't know anything about the element. If you put it on the empty queue, well, it will return something. Either well, functions are total, but you don't know what it will return. Yeah?
And why not use option?
Just to make it easier to use. So if you know that the queue is not empty, you can just write empty and do not have to write the empty or something like this. You can just write get min and do not need to write the get min or something like this. It just makes things easier when you know that the queue is non-empty. Otherwise, it makes no sense getting the minimal element anyway. So it's more like as imagine that the implementation would raise an exception at this point and not return none. That's a better match for this implementation. Okay, and delete min exactly the same, and also of course the queue must be non-empty here. And there's another option, merge, that is quite common because it can be efficiently implemented for many functional data structures. So there are even functional data structures that can implement merge in constant time. And merge is just join two priority queues, so form the union of two priority queues. And there's another option that you often see in priority queues, and it's called decrease key. And this means some element that you know that is in the priority queue that you can somehow reference to, decrease its priority or change its priority. This is an operation that's required, for example, who knows Dijkstra's algorithm. So if Dijkstra's algorithm finds a new shorter path to a node, it has to decrease this node's priority. So it manages priority queue of nodes, and at some point it sees, I have a shorter path to this node, then it decreases this priority. It decreases this node's priority. So in our simplified setting, decrease key cannot be really implemented because we don't have keys to reference to elements in the priority queue. We just identified elements of the priority queue and priorities. So the decrease key operation is not really meaningful. The only thing you could do here is you could remove, no, we cannot remove elements. We can only remove the minimum element. So what you could perhaps do in this simplified setting is you could implement a remove element, remove some element from the queue operation. But for the data structures that we discuss, this operation will not be efficient. So we don't handle it here. So of course we need an abstraction function. So what is the multisets represented by the priority queue implementation. And we need an invariant. So what is the invariant of the priority queue data structure that we use? We are still at the abstract interface, so we are not looking at some concrete data structure. But we want the possibility to have an invariant. If we don't have one, well, we set it to true. Okay. And now, what is the correctness? So the abstraction of the empty priority queue is the empty multiset. Is empty returns whether the abstraction of the queue is actually empty. Insert, as expected, it inserts the abstraction of insertion is the abstraction of the original set with the element inserted. So for delete minimum, well, we need the additional precondition that the queue is not empty. I have swapped an H and a Q. Sorry for that. Strange. Yeah, I thought this slide is generated from an Isabel theorem. So these sort of things should not happen. Ah, no, it's not. I have somehow assembled this precondition here. Okay, so this should be, of course, Q.
It should be M-set.
Yes, I probably picked a wrong theorem here to get the precondition from. So it should be MZQ not empty, and under this precondition, if I delete the minimum element, then I delete and then abstract, then I get the multiset of the original queue minus the minimum element of the multiset of the original queue. And this min MZ, well, it's just the minimal element of a multiset. You can define that. So if you have a linearly ordered multiset, you can define what is its uniquely defined minimal element. Because it's a linear order, and multisets are finite. In particular, multisets represented by queues
there's no problem in defining that. For infinite, yes?
Why do we need a precondition here? Is the delimit function on multiple, on the priority queue not handling?
We do not. I put the precondition here to not require delimit to check whether the queue is empty or not. Because if the queue is empty, it makes no sense to delete a minimal element because there is none. So of course we could totalize this function by just querying is empty and then returning the identity, so returning the same queue. But I intentionally put this invariant here such that some potential user of this interface realizes, well, perhaps it makes no sense to delete the minimum of an empty queue. And with the same precondition here, getMin is of course the minimum element of the multiset. So as long as this multiset is finite and linearly ordered, there's no problem in defining this. And this will be the case for all our implementations. So the minimum in Isabel actually is only defined for, I'm not sure whether it's for all, they derive it from a lattice, so they derive it from the infimum of a lattice. So you can have, you also have the minimum for infinite sets, but only if they form lattices that have this minimum. So, for example, if you have a set So let's consider, for example, this set. This set, let's assume integers. Does this set have a minimum? Obviously not. But if we would start at -3 here, well, the set can be infinite but still has a minimum, but it has no maximum. But in case of finite sets of integers or finite sets of any other linearly ordered thing, we always have a minimum. We can just finitely compare finitely many elements and pick the minimal one. So that's, and the definition of minimum in Isabel, well, as long as the set has a minimum, it's well defined, otherwise you just have no lemmas to reason about it. And of course, last but not least, the invariance must be preserved. So these are the operations that return new queues, and they must preserve the invariance. Everything with a precondition that the invariant holds initially. Okay, so that's the abstract priority queue interface. Any questions to that? So the files should be in the material folder, the accompanying Isabel theories. So now we have set the field for for priority queues. Let's consider what is a heap. So intuitively a heap, well, it's one part of what you know from heap sort, namely you have the minimum element at the root, and for each subtree the root node is the minimum element of its subtree. So you have something like, let's say you have this would be a heap. So the root is the smallest element of everything,
The 2 is smaller than these 2, the 3 is smaller than these 2. That's a heap.
And, well, of course, if you have a heap, the get min operation is easy. You just return the root node of the heap. It's always a minimum element. The other operations, well, this depends on how you implement the heap. So let's do it. The empty operation is, of course, the empty tree. Is empty? Well, you can query whether the tree is empty. Get min, yeah, as I said, just return the root of the tree. Now let's do it this way around. Assume we already have a merge function. If you have a merge function, so to join two heaps, then we can implement the other functions on top of it. So we can implement insert just by merging a singleton heap with a other heap, and we can also implement delete min. How would you implement delete min? Yeah? Yes. So we can just merge the two subtrees. This effectively removes the root element, which is the minimum. So if we have merge for a heap data structure, we are done. So the most interesting function is merge. We can try to do it naively. Let's try to do it naively on heaps. So we have two heaps. They have elements A and B. How would you merge them? We just want to have it a heap, not worry about balancedness for now. Yeah? Okay, so we put the smaller one to the root, we have min heaps.
Yeah, then.
So we put A to the root.
And then, depending on, let's assume A would be bigger, then.
No, I have A smaller.
Oh, okay, then B bigger.
Yeah.
So then we can merge like the two subtrees of B. Yes, in 3 and T4 we can merge these two.
So we want T3 and T4, yeah?
Yeah, and this result we will merge with the whole tree of A.
So we want to merge this one. So A must go to the top.
Yeah, okay, then I was wrong. I have to merge T1 and T2, and then we merge the little thing with this.
So you want to merge
T1
and T2, put it here. And
would be
put B here.
Yeah.
But if you merge T1 and T2, we also get the root element there, right?
Well, if we get the new tree, right? So merge will take two heaps,
yeah,
and gives you a new tree. And we can just use the tree as a new left successor, and we can use the whole tree starting with B as a right successor. That's it. So may produce very unbalanced trees, but it preserves the heap property because A is smaller than all of these elements, and by transitivity, A is smaller than B is smaller than all of these elements. So we can put both under A. So these are the easy cases. If we have leaves, And this is the case that we just had, and the other one. Any questions? Okay. Well, as I said, if we merge natively, well, we may get in worst case we get lists, not trees. So it's not that hard to do a merge that produces something like and always having the leaf here. So it's not an efficient data structure. We could have used lists in the first place and would have saved all the storage for the extra leaves. So we have, of course, as for search trees, we have to maintain balance. So for search trees, we used what did we have? Red-black trees, two sweet trees, to maintain balance. So we somehow annotated the nodes with some extra information that we could then use to maintain the balance. We can do something similar here, and we will have three heap data structures. Only two of them are on the slides. The next one probably will be next lecture. So we will do leftist heaps. We will do so-called brown trees. These are two quite simple ways of managing balance. And then we will do the well-known binomial heaps next lecture. They are a bit more sophisticated. Okay, so leftist heap and brown trees are not that well-known. Who knows this data structure already? I did not know them. Ah, one knows them, okay. Or is it a question? So for leftist heaps, so we have a, it's somewhere in material, it should be under leftist heaps. And what is the idea? So we define the rank of a tree to be the depth of the rightmost leaf. So
some arbitrary tree data structure. Like this, then the rank of this tree is the depth of the rightmost leaf. So how deep is the rightmost leaf? So it's depending on how we define it, 2 or 1. Probably we can say it's 1, 2. To be honest, I have to look at the definition before I fix to 2 or 1 here. So it's 1, let's say it's 2. The rank of this is 2. The rank of this subtree is 1. So it's always you go from the root to the rightmost leaf, and that's the rank. So that's just a definition. Now we say a leftist tree, the rank of every left child is greater than the rank of its right sibling. So for any pair of siblings here, the rank of this one must be greater than or equal to the rank of this one. Here too. So this is actually a leftist tree. It's not very balanced. I can even enlarge it arbitrarily large here. But it has this property that the rank of the right to the right, I always have short paths.
So that's the problem. So I can append much more nodes here. I can say, okay, well, let's have a leaf here and some more nodes here and so on. Still a leftist tree. But from any node in this tree, the path to the right leaf is short. Actually, it's logarithmically short in the size of the tree. Because, well, I always know when I go to the right that I have more on the left, so to speak. And that's we will prove that this holds. But the idea is paths to the right are short. So what can we do if we want to do operations? Well, in a heap, the ordering of the subtrees is irrelevant. It does not matter. For search tree, we had always that the smaller elements were here, the larger elements were on the other side. But for a heap, the smallest element is here, and we only know everything below is larger. So if you have a heap like this, T1 and T2, well, you can swap these two. No, you can swap these two subtrees. You can swap left and right here. It's still a heap with the same meaning. Or if you look for a point to insert, for a root node to insert an element, you can go to the right and insert it here instead of going to the left. So that's roughly the idea why for a heap it's enough. It's enough to have short paths to one side. Okay. So this is it. So if whenever we insert something, we do it on the right, and whenever the rank of the right child gets too large, well, we just swap left and right, and condition restored. Condition was the rank of the left must be greater than the rank of the right. So we insert something on the right. We insert here, this tree gets bigger. At some point it's bigger. If the rank is higher than this tree, then we just swap the two trees to restore the leftist heap condition. And swapping two subtrees, well, it does not, it remains a heap with the same meaning. So that's the rough intuitive ideas. So in order to do that, we have to store the rank with a tree, with a node. So each node gets an extra field, it's this one here, and it stores the rank of the node. Otherwise it's just a normal tree. And we use this age or rank or height here, but this should be R for rank as abbreviation. Okay, abstraction is no problem. It's exactly the same as we would have for trees that do not store the rank. We just ignore the rank information. Okay. The heap property, well, that's the standard heap property. It says, we had it already, so it says that both children are heaps and the element at the root. The element at the root is smaller than all elements x in the children. Okay, then we need the property for a leftist heap, for a leftist tree. So we need a rank function. So we can define the rank function just as this. So the rank of the leaf is 0, and the rank of a node is the rank of its right child plus one. We count how often we have to go to the right until we reach a leaf. Yes, but this is the rank. This is the rank of the tree. The invariant will then say that at this position we store the correct value. So we store the rank in the constructor, but we say we store some natural number in the constructor. Only the invariant says that it's actually the rank. So we have to define somehow the rank. Otherwise, we could store arbitrary numbers there. So we want to store the rank here. So now in the invariant, we say exactly that. So the first, this equation here, is what answers your question. So the invariant ensures that we actually store the rank and not some arbitrary number. This is this smaller than is the invariant for leftist heap. So the rank of the right subtree is smaller than the rank of the left subtree. And both children are leftist trees again. So sorry if I mix up leftist heap and leftist tree. I think it's called consistently leftist tree here. Okay. Any questions to the invariant? Okay. So the complete invariant is of course heap and leftist tree. So it must form a heap and this leftist tree property must be satisfied. Okay, now why do we do that? So first of all, we have this nice property. The rank of the tree is logarithmic in the size of the elements. Or as we write it, we have to the power of 2 on both sides here. We can quickly sketch the proof of that. I'll just sketch it on the board. So if we have a tree that has the form left and right, we want to show this. So by induction hypothesis, we know that the rank of right equals the rank of p minus 1, so we know that by the invariant, and we know that rank of left is greater than this, also by the invariant, so the rank of the left one is greater than the rank of the right one. Now we can start with the size of p plus 1, so that's what's written on the right-hand side here. This index 1 always means size plus 1, number of elements plus 1. We can insert the definition of size. It's left plus right plus 2. Now we can apply the induction hypothesis, which gives us an estimate for left plus 1 and right plus 1. So we will get 2. It broke. So we get 2 to the power of rank left plus 2 to the power of rank right. This is the induction hypothesis for left and right. Now we can have this. So we can estimate rank left by rank t minus 1, and we can insert this. So this rank left is rank t minus 1, and here we also get rank t minus 1 just by inserting this. Well, and there we have what we want. So this is you could can write it down as this in Isabel, or you can use induct. Probably you can even use induct auto, and it will do it for you. So it's not that complicated to see that this holds. And in fact, this leftist tree may be very unbalanced. So for example, for this example, this estimate may be much. This estimate may be quite imprecise, actually, because you may have only one or two, one rank one or two on the left, and here there may be an almost complete tree, so of any depth. So these leftist tree can get very unbalanced, but it does not harm. Okay. So now we can define merge such that it is bounded by the ranks. As we said, for merge, we all somehow have to insert stuff into one tree. And we can always arrange it to insert on the right to the right, to do the insertion in the right subtree. And if we always do the insertion in the right subtree, we know that recursion is bounded by the rank. This is the main idea. So these are the these are the easy cases, and this is a complicated case. So let's look at this case here. So what do we do? So this node here is a so-called smart constructor, so first ignore it and just assume it constructs the node with root A, left L, and right this argument. So if we have to merge two nodes, if this node A1 is smaller, well, then we put A1 to the root, have the left here, and we merge with the right subtree of R1. So we merge this whole tree with the right subtree of R1. And in the other case, well, we put A2 to the root, and we merge R2 with this whole subtree. So it's essentially the same merge function as we had. But we have this node constructor here. And this node constructor does exactly this maintenance of the invariant by inserting. It has inserted. So this node constructor just swaps if the ranks got too big. So if the rank of the right subtree got bigger than the rank of the left subtree, well, this node function here will just swap the two trees and construct the tree with this one on the left. And the node constructor computes the correct rank of the constructed tree. So the node constructor just, if the ranks are the right way round, this is a swap case. So if the right rank is, sorry.
No, it's not a swap case.
Yeah, I see, but I got confused.
Yeah, it's right. So the rank of the right subtree should be smaller, and then
yeah, but. Why does the right? Okay, that's why I got confused. This is the rank. I thought this was the subtree, right, that occurs on the left. Okay, this was my confusion. Okay, so if this is a non-swap case, so everything is in its correct order, and the rank of the new tree, well, it's the rank of the right subtree plus one, as by the invariant. Otherwise, we swap. We swap right and left, and the rank, of course, is the rank of the new right subtree, which ought to be the left one. So that we just, this is node constructed, just constructs the nodes, but swaps if the rank condition is not satisfied. And the idea is by swapping, you don't destroy the heap property, and you don't change the meaning of the multiset. Yeah, so that's the whole idea of that's the whole idea of leftist trees. And the merge function, well, you can see you can easily see that it's bounded bounded by the rank. So whenever you descend to the right. You recurse, so the rank of R1 gets smaller, or the rank of R2 gets smaller than the sum of the ranks. So we take the sum of the ranks of these trees. Here, the sum will decrease by 1, because R2 has a smaller rank than this whole tree. And in this case, it will also decrease by 1, because R1 has a 1 smaller rank than this whole tree. So it's quite easy to see that the sum of the ranks decrease. So there can't be more recursions than the sum of the ranks. Yeah, so we can say the sum of the ranks decrease with every recursive call. The function package will see the sizes of the trees. So the pure termination argument is the sizes of the trees decrease. That's what's, what I used in the implementation. But for the complexity, you have to see that the ranks actually decrease. However, yeah, so the ranks, I think it's even set up a way that you can actually show that the ranks decrease, but it's a bit hard to see it without the, without having the invariant of the tree at hand. So that's a technical thing. The termination of a function, so the, you must show termination of a function without knowing any preconditions. The function must terminate unconditionally on every element of the type. So for every argument you pass, independent whether it satisfies the invariant or not, it just must have the right types. The function must terminate. You must prove that in Isabel. Otherwise, the function package will not give you a function. And here it's easy to see that the sizes of the trees decrease. So if you define the size, for example, to be the cardinality of the multiset, the number of nodes in the tree, it's easy to see that in the recursive call this decreases. Well, this one has at least one more element than R1. But it's not that easy to see that the ranks decreases if you don't have the invariant. So it must still hold for arbitrary numbers stored there. Yeah, so I'm not even sure whether it holds. I think it holds because the former proof somehow managed to prove it in Isabel, the former termination proof. But I change it to the size because that makes the termination proof. But if you know that the invariant holds, which is all we are actually interested in, it's easy to see that the ranks also decrease. Because we exactly defined the invariant that the rank of this one is the rank of this one minus one. Okay. Any questions so far? Yeah, so the functional correctness proof and preservation of invariant is actually straightforward. It's not much more than induct auto. The complexity, so we already had this. And this gives us the complexities. So merge, we've already said merge, the merge function, in every call the rank decreases, the rank of the two arguments decreases. So of course we can estimate the time needed for merge then by the sum of the two ranks, plus one, because we need the leaf case. And yeah, this gives us, if we do the if we do the logarithm on both sides, inserting this lemma here, then we get this estimate. Any questions so far? Okay. So then we can derive the other ones. So insert is just merge with a singleton tree. So we just merge with a singleton tree where we can construct the singleton tree in constant time. And then we merge, which is logarithmic time, so we get this measure. And delete min, well, this is just merge, the two subtrees. Well, and we have to we have to merge the two subtrees whose ranks are also logarithmic in their sizes. That's why we get we get a logarithmic measure here. I'm not sure whether we can get a better bound. Probably not. But we have to we have the two subtrees. We have to merge them. So we will merge T1 and T2, and we know the rank. We know the number, the rank of T2. And we know the rank of T1. We can only use the size of the whole tree, perhaps minus one, to estimate them. So maybe we can get a minus one here, but maybe not. But we are only interested in asymptotic bounds anyway. So it's O of log. It's O of logged size of T. So that's. For these bounds, we are only interested in asymptotic bounds. So even if you have to add some factors here to get the bound through, this does not really matter if we are only interested in asymptotic bounds. But actually, it can happen if you try to prove such a thing. If you try to prove such a thing by induction, and you make this one too big, it actually can happen that your induction does not go through anymore. So just by being too imprecise, it may happen that in the inductive case you cannot do the estimation anymore. This can actually happen, so you have to be careful not to go too imprecise everywhere. Okay, so any questions to leftist trees? So these were leftist trees, so we have a nice logarithmic complexity heap data structure, quite simple to implement, quite simple to prove. What do we want more? Any questions to leftist trees?
Yeah, regarding the termination tool.
Yeah.
Merge,
yeah.
You said it worked. It worked with Dao without having to manually do it, right? And why did you then show us the size estimate for the in the next one?
No, we have to. Actually, we have to convince the function package to consider the sizes of the nodes. So it requires some convincing of the function package. Yeah, it was. So I just told the function package consider the size of the multisets, consider the cardinality of the tree as size, and then it worked automatically. But usually it would consider the size a bit differently. It would somehow say the size of a node is, I don't know what it defined there, something that did not really match. Okay. Yeah, so what do we want more? Well, the question is, can we perhaps use standard trees without any additional information? Just trees. Element, right successor, left successor, and keep them balanced. Without any management information at the nodes. Yeah?
In general or with left?
For heaps.
In general.
In general. We want to have heaps.
If you do binary, can you use the binary where you will always have almost
okay, but this does not nicely work functionally.
Why? Because you descend the whole tree, then you insert, and then you have to load up. Actually, it's not that nice, but.
Okay. Yeah. So we will do something similar. Something similar to this. We will not exactly do binary trees. But the idea, the spirit, may be similar. So we will say. We will use so-called Brown trees. Does anyone know the Brown tree data structure? Just out of curiosity. A Brown tree says the number of elements in the right and left sibling must only differ by one at most. So it's not exactly exactly this almost complete tree, but it's a similar property. So we say that if we have the left and the right tree, then we say that the number here and here must differ by at most one. And we also say which one is the smaller one. So and in order not to write it in the wrong direction, here now I will uncover it. So this is a Brown tree. So if I have a tree and it has left and right, well, then I say the number in here must be smaller than the number in the left, but at most one smaller. So there's the other bound there. So that's a very strong balancing criterion. I just say the number of elements in these in left and right must be almost equal.
And if they're not equal, only the right subtree is supposed to have less number.
Yes, exactly one less. So there are only two possibilities for this equation. there's either the possibility the two elements are equal, or there's a possibility the left is one bigger than the right. Yeah?
For proving, would it be better to write that this or right instead of just none? So we say that either one case and the other case is true.
Good question. I can't actually answer which one is better. So maybe you end up in having to prove a lemma. For that. okay. So as this tree is almost, so all the trees have almost the same size, so you can also prove this logarithmic, the standard logarithmic dependency between height and number of elements. The proof is actually quite straightforward. In the theories it goes by induct auto and one case distinction whether the height of the tree has fallen to zero. Okay, so we have to. The interesting thing is, why does this work? So why can we maintain, or how can we maintain this invariant of left and right subtrees being related like this? So we have to think what happens if we add an element. So at some point we want to insert an element. Let's assume we have a tree. We have a heap, and we want to insert one more element, A. And let's say A is greater than the root node. Otherwise, we just swap A and the root node and insert the root node. We have A is greater than the root node. So we have to insert A somewhere below the root. Where would you insert it? Left or right? Right. So if you insert A on the right, so then we get something like this, and we have element A here, then we can check what happens to the invariants. What happened to the invariant? Well, it's violated, probably. Right may be bigger than left now. Yeah?
I just want to say that there are essentially two cases, either the heads are now equal or just by one.
Yeah, there are only these two cases. So, but if we insert to the right, the invariant may get violated. But what if we insert to the right and then swap the two subtrees? What about the invariant now of this one? It holds. We can go through it. So we have to check that. I'm just writing down the invariant for this. We have to check that the new right subtree is less than or equal to the left new left subtree, which is right plus one. Is less than or equal L plus 1. Okay, so left less than or equal R plus 1
just read it off up there. R plus 1 less than or equal L plus 1. Just read it off up there at 1 on both sides. Invariance still holds.
So that's exactly what I wrote on the board. So you can just see this is a new, two new equations that you have to prove, and you already find them here. Okay. We also may want to remove an element. So for this trees we will not implement we will implement delete similar to as we would do it on the heaps that you mentioned, these binary heaps. We will remove some element. We will remove some element, swap it, replace it by the top element that we wanted to delete. So we remove some element from down the heap, put it on the top, and then let it sink down or sift it down until it reached a good position. So for this, we need to remove an element somewhere from the heap. Not the minimum one, one leaf. We need to remove a leaf. So from which subtree would you remove the leaf? So we have this situation and we need to remove a leaf. Yeah?
From the left subtree.
Yes, exactly. So we remove the leaf from the left subtree and then?
Put it on top and sit it down.
No, but if we remove the leaf just on the left subtree, invariant may get violated again. Left may get too small.
Okay, I would first have sifted down and then check the invariant. We can spot that.
Yeah. So it's exactly the same. We move from the left and then we swap. It's exactly the symmetric thing.
So we remove from the left and then swap. And what we get is these two new things. So the new right one, must be less than the new left one, and this way around. So here I have minus one and plus one that cancel out. And these are exactly size left is less than. Size left minus 1 is less than or equal to size right. We can see it here, this equation. And this size right less than size left, we can see it here. So it still holds. this is the idea of how to maintain the invariant in Brown trees. So we, for insertion, we insert to the right and then just swap the two subtrees. Yeah, so we can implement this on just binary trees. We don't need any maintenance information on the nodes. We implement no merge this time, but as I said, we implement insert and delete. Insert. How would you implement insert?
Insert to the right.
Yeah, and if the
so you still have to you have this heap and you want to insert an element A. So there may be two cases, yeah?
Yeah, either A is smaller than B.
Exactly, yeah. So if A is smaller, then A gets the new root and B is inserted to the right. If A is not smaller, then we insert A to the right and keep B the root. So these are just the two cases.
That's That's exactly what this function does. So it, if a is smaller, then a gets a new root and we insert the old root to the right and swap. And here, the same way around. Here the other way around, we insert a to the right and swap. And again, it's quite straightforward to show correctness and invariant preservation here. So once you have intuitively, you have to get this idea why insertion is correct. And for Isabel, it's once you have this idea, perhaps it's one lemma and it's not too far from induct auto. well, delete minimum element. How would you do that? Think of binary heaps from heap sort. Who knows heap sort or this binary heaps? So how do you delete an element there? The minimum element. Yeah?
Maybe swap it with the element in the lowest level, which is the most right, and then you sort of problem.
Yeah, so if you have this heap here, and it may somehow, by the lowest level, may somehow have a gap. I don't know how to draw these things nicely. So these heap are always in levels there, as they are stored in an array. And what you do is you take, you remove this element. So you make this heap one shorter here, meaning removing this leaf. Put the value of this leaf to this node, because you wanted to erase this node and not the leaf. And then you have a node that may be too big here, and then you start thinking it down, you start to think sift down or sink procedure for this node until swapping it with appropriate predecessor nodes until it's not too big anymore. Yeah?
Cannot do it exactly like this.
No, we can't.
Because we cannot point to the last element.
Right.
Put down this one, and then that's really
but we can. But the idea is, it's enough to remove any element out of the subtrees. It must not be this one.
No.
Yeah. So which element would we pick? So of course we don't have this layered structure. We don't have an array to index in here. So at if you have this heap, left, our heap looks like this. And we want to remove B, so we have to pick and remove an arbitrary element from one of these two. Yeah? So you?
Who gets the left? Who gets the left subtree?
We cannot remove a root. Removing a root node is always difficult. What to do with the children? Yeah. And what node is then effectively removed?
The leftmost.
The leftmost of right. So we go to the left, go to the left, go to the left, go to the left, until we reach the leftmost node. And that is what we remove. And this also, removing the leftmost nodes also consistent with our invariant preservation. Because to remove things, we can remove it from the left and then swap. The invariant is preserved. And once we have done this, we have to do the sift down. So that's exactly what we do. So we remove the leftmost node, get Y and a new heap. And then we do a sift down of Y in the heap, well, we have swapped. We, after removing the leftmost node, we need to swap. Yeah? Sorry, we can use?
I think we can just use like delete min in the first way, like you said. I think when we do just delete the minimum of the right tree, that means we actually remove the root and get a new tree, which is now without the root. And but we know the root, I mean, we can easily see the root.
So
and then replace our root by the right root. Well, I think that should be possible.
Let's try to sketch what you said, but just to understand what you meant. So you wanted to do what?
I want to delete the min of the red tree because there is an element probably.
Delete the min of the left tree.
Yeah, exactly. Because that will be the root. Won't it? I mean, when I delete the min of the right tree, then I know.
So you can only delete the root. You can only delete the minimum of the left tree. Otherwise, you will end up with a violated invariant.
Right.
So you want to delete the minimum of the left tree?
Yes. Then
recursively.
Recursively, yes. And I have this root of the left tree is removed, and I can replace like the. I actually want to remove my root of this bigger tree, and I can replace it by the by this or by the other.
Oh wait. Yeah. So you delete the minimum of.
If you could maybe put it on that, maybe. Like there, can you the root node of this one could you maybe name it whatever, and the other one B and the other C also.
Yeah. Okay.
So when I remove from the left tree the B, then I get a new tree which is already inspired, and then I just and B is. Removed from that, and I want to remove A actually from my.
Yes.
So that I can put A, like remove it, and then I just have to pick B or C on the root there, I think. But I'm not completely sure.
Okay, so you somehow want to do the sift down and delete, you somehow combine the two. So wait, let's go through it. It's interesting, perhaps it works. So you. You remove the B. So then you have the B removed here, and you have a new tree without the B, and you have the B here.
Yes.
And now you say you can just restore the heap property if it should be violated by swapping B with C. So B is definitely smaller than everything in here.
I'm not really sure because
B is because it was the minimum, it was the root element of the heap. So B is smaller than everything than here. And so if B is also smaller than C, everything is fine. But if B is greater than C, then we have to swap C, and C is smaller than B, smaller than everything in here, should work.
No, but no. The
right subtree.
What?
The right subtree is the problem. Because, so let C be like 2, and then C has 3 under it, and B is 4, then you cannot do this.
We have to sit down with B, but we can't do this.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah, B is not necessarily smaller than everything in the subtree under C.
Yeah, so, the problem is, wait, now I'm confused.
So there is a case where B is larger than C, and also larger than some of the elements in the subtree of C.
There is a case where B is larger than C, yes?
And also larger than some of the items.
then you would have to swap B and C and do the sift down anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you end up with a standard sift down.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But maybe what you could do is because do we need and delete? Okay. If we would have implemented delete min with so that it returns a pair, then we could get rid of the delete function because we always delete in the left subtree.
Yeah, but it does not. That's the question whether it's yeah. So let's go for this delete left sift down. Perhaps there are some variations. Yeah. So if I could, perhaps I could. You mean I could use delete min here instead of delete left,
if it would
and then sift down. Yeah, this may work. but it would probably complicate the algorithm. Yeah, of course.
This would change the whole interface.
You know, but I mean, maybe it would also complicate the algorithm because you would have to. Maybe not. I'm not that sure.
I think the runtime would be like.
No.
Because you have to sift down like all the.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You will get one sift down per level in the tree. This actually may kill your runtime. Yeah. At least you have to be careful about this. Okay. Yeah, so we can delete the left, just descend to the left, and of course swap the subtrees. This was, we already ensured that the invariant is preserved by this. And sift down, it's a standard sift down that you know from heaps. So for a leaf case, you just have to figure out the right order of X and A. So this is the case where one is a leaf and the other is a singleton tree. and for two nodes, well, there are just a few cases that you have to consider, but I think the idea is find out whether to swap with the left or with the right subtree, and then sift down recursively. So let's try to reconstruct the standard idea before looking at this mess of code. So we are in this situation. We have an element. We have a name here, A. And this is x1 and this is x2. And the idea is we have A, x1 and x2. The idea is find the smallest of these three and put it on the top. So A is not the smallest. If A is the smallest, we are finished. If x1 is the smallest element, well then x1 has to go to the top, and we can sink down A, we can sift down A in the left tree. Otherwise, if x2 is the smallest of these three, x2 has to go to the top, and we can sink or sift down A in the right subtree. So that's the idea, and I hope that these cases are somehow covered here. So this case, the first case is that A was the smallest, so we do nothing. The second case is that x1 is the smallest. Then x1 goes to the root, and we have to sift down A to the left where it came from, where the x1 came from, and here is the symmetric case, x2 is the smallest, so x2 goes to the root. Okay, so this obviously preserves the invariant, because it does not change the structure of the tree. So it just swaps. So the structure of the tree remains the same, it just swaps elements. And the invariant only says something about the structure of the tree, not on what the elements are, only how many elements there are, and where they are. So this this obviously preserves the invariant. Yeah, and functional correctness, well, it's in the archive of formal proof, it's an AFP entry. You can have a look at it. Mostly straightforward, but it requires some lemmas to distinguish all these cases. Perhaps the proofs can even be refined if one puts some work on it. Okay. Yeah, so the complexity is also quite easy to see, because these runtimes are all bounded by the height. We always descend, and for recursion, we always descend by one into the subtrees. And the height was logarithmic. Yeah. That's it, basically. I have some material on sorting with priority queues, so we already did sorting with, first of all, any questions to this, first of all, any questions to these Brown trees? Okay, so we can also use priority queues for sorting, this is more or less the same way as we used trees, search trees for sorting. So how would you sort with a priority queue? Yeah,
there's a heap from the list, and then just remove the elements after another and insert them into the list.
Yeah, exactly.
So for certain trees, you can do the build heap intelligently and it's quite efficient.
Yes.
I don't know if it applies to the heap to the list.
Wait for the exercise sheet.
Okay.
Naively we can build the heap. We can build the heap just by folding over insert, and then we can just remove the minimum elements until the heap is empty. So that's the naive way, and this one here can be improved intelligently, but the runtime will be dominated by this one anyway.
Yeah, the arrays that would be faster.
Not asymptotically. This is an
for binary heaps, it's faster if you do it in a good way.
Ah, okay, but asymptotically.
Because it's n log n with.
Yeah.
If you construct it natively, and if you don't construct it natively, it's log n.
But the sorting still is n log n.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so this phase here dominates the complexity anyway. So from the whole algorithm remains n log n, but this array building up, and it's not log n, it's n, so it's linear time. So it cannot build up an array of size n in log n time. That's still just not possible.
Yeah,
yeah. So the complexity of this thing is n log n. So as is for heap sort. And here for our naive-minded heap sort, or functional heap sort, or how you would call it, this is just. Well, we build the array by inserting. It's n elements that we insert to the heap, requiring log n time in worst case. And here we delete n, we recurse n times, and remove an element from the heap which is which requires log n time each removal operation. So that's an n log n algorithm. And that's more or less one of the ideas behind heap sort. The other idea, if you implement heap sort, the other idea is how to implement it that you can do it in in-situ sort. So how to you implement the heap as an array, then have this heapify thing, and then use this layered heap to remove and sift down. So this is the other idea. So this is more or less the basic idea, the high level idea. If you want to explain heap sort to someone, you would probably first start with more or less this idea, where you build a heap and then remove the minimum element iteratively, and then you would go on. And there is even a really nice way to implement that on arrays. Yeah, so this is the one part. Okay. Any questions so far? I think then we are out of time and out of material. Thank you very much. And see you in the tutorial, where I think we have put it on the sheet, exactly this linear time heap construction thing.
I have a question regarding the homework.
Yeah?
You said the homework requires us to import the try theory. So what should be the path for the import?
It should work with any pass, actually. Yes, it did not work because it's a bit strange system. It ignores the imports, actually. Uh-huh. I think it ignores it either completely ignores the import or ignores the path names of the imports. Maybe it does only ignore the path names of the import. I do not even know how the system works. And then it feeds it to Isabel with the right imports already set up. And what the right imports are, I have to tell the admin of the system. And if I don't tell him, then I get mails from you, it complains, it does not build. So in any way, if it builds on your local machine, and you are sure that the theories that you import are standard theories, then I will probably be able to build it on my machine. Yeah.
Well, they're not standard. They're given as part of the course. They're not.
Yes. Either. If they are given as part of the course, I have access to them too, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And I just have to adjust the path in worst case. In best case, use the path from the templates. If you want a service to me, use the path from the templates, because these are the paths that work for me on my local machine. So this is a bit. We will have to find a solution for the setup at some point to make it more standardized. But for now, yeah.
And it seems that we always have to name our lemma if you want to put it in the homework, or if the system doesn't seem to do the check build.
If you don't name the lemma, the system
does
not. I did not know that.
At least, that's why I thought for the past.
Okay, I did not know that. So I never used the system. Yeah, but as I said, as long as it builds for you locally, you should not be too worried about getting back an error message from the system.
I have a question. Wenn man das ein delete min so ein paar machen würde, dann könnte man ja sift down einfach anders implementieren und sift down siftet sozusagen ein Level runter.
Also
dann würde es ja wieder gehen.
Aber
du kommst immer noch, du kommst immer noch.
Also es macht es nicht schneller, aber.
Und nein, du kommst immer noch in das Problem, was wir hier hatten. Wenn du Delete Min hier gemacht hast, dann kriegst du ein B hier, das ist zu groß. Und das B hier musst du im Worst Case bis ganz hier runter shiften. Bis ganz hier runter sinken lassen. Und das musst du. Und ich sehe jetzt gerade nicht, kann sein, dass es nicht muss, aber wenn du das Rekord auf das ich machst, musst du das im Worst Case in jedem Level machen. Das könnte zu viel sein.
Und wenn jetzt wirklich viel dann versuch das umzugehen, weil es ist ja zwei.
Aber wir machen das auch hier.
Rein im Computer, da kann
ich. Sorry, we're also shifting it in our definition.
or if we had every subtree,
what we know, we go one time down to find the leftmost element. That's clearly the height of the tree.
Right.
And once we have found the leftmost element, we go another time down to sink the element.
Yeah, but
this is also the height.
It's not necessarily on this side, right? We're going down on the whole tree.
Yes, but only one path.
Ah.
So sinking an element only follows one path in the tree.
Right. Okay.
And what he proposes, merge recursive, so delete min recursively, so we may get a whole path in this tree, 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 and I just can't see whether we can really get it or not. So maybe you can somehow estimate that we don't get it.
No.
Yeah, bounce up.
By the way, you're still recording.
Hmm?
You're still recording.
Oh?
You're still recording.
Thank you. I will stop.